Hi, I'm Alex.
And I'm Tom. And on this episode of Flash in the Pan, we've hired some male prostitutes and dressed them up in three-piece suits. We grew up in a world of online animation. And we're digging them up for your consideration. Bringing you the tunes that made us who we are. Flash in the Pan. Flash in the Pan. Hello, Flashketeers, and welcome back to your premier source of internet archaeological animation entertainment, Flash in the Pan.
Wow. Welcome back, you person.
You sure are people listening to this.
You people.
Unless someone has actually been playing the podcast for their pets, in which case, woof woof, meow.
And other various animal noises that we definitely know.
Caw-caw. I'm very bad at animal noises. Nice of you to join us. We've got a pretty chill but pretty interesting episode for you folks tonight, I think.
Yes.
As always, you can join us and watch along with us by going to our website, flashinthepancast.com. where you'll find links to all the cartoons we talk about, as well as all of our previous episodes. Before we kick off proper, though, there has been a little bit of a development, which is that finally, after 4 solid years of people racing in and saying, hey, how can I help support the show? We have finally set up a Patreon, that is patreon.com/flashinthepan. You can join up, you can sling us a couple of monies, or even a couple more monies.
5 monies is the maximum.
No, it's not, remember.
Is it not? Oh, no, yes, you're right, yes, there is a... So there's two pounds and £5, and then there is a tier for whoever's been hate listening to us for 4 years who really wants us to stop. It will cost £1,500 for our silence.
Yeah, but honestly, I think £1,500 is enough to buy my silence. So if you would like to support us or make us stop, then you can go to our Patreon page. Becoming a Flashketeer on Patreon does get you early access to these episodes. And at the higher tier, you will get access to our lovely, shiny Flash in the Pan Discord page, where you can chat with us and other fans. Isn't that nice?
That is nice.
Yeah. So, ad break over. It is time for our first cartoon, and we are careening back into the distant past to explore a saga, a much-requested saga, entitled How to Kill a Mockingbird.
The next morning, Scout and her friends and her brother decided to go exploring for treasure. But too late, a pirate found it first. And who was this pirate, you ask? No other than Boo Radley, who wants them dead as much as the treasure. Almost. He says to them, "Now I have the treasure from the tree, and all you get is the string and the clock watch." And Scout, a girl, says, "Not so fast, pirate." And it turns out she's actually not a girl at all, but a robot guy. I was like, yeah, right, this treasure's mine forever. And right when he's getting ready to ride away on this burning shark, the pirate's like, no! Because right then, a mockingbird, which is giant and has blades like a helicopter, takes away all the gold and gems, except for the character name gem, because he's worthless.
So that is still one of the best video essays put online.
Yeah. And, yeah, you could certainly say that, yeah.
It's definitely better edited than some I've seen.
Mm. Oh, yeah.
And, So, where should we start with this? Because, first of all, it's quite long. It's a proper saga.
It's 13 minutes long.
13 minutes. And this is from when? 2003? 2004?
I'm honestly not sure. I saw a bunch of different people saying different times. So... let's go with, like, it's from, like, 2004. Let's go with that.
So for 2004, a 13-minute Flash video is a real investment.
Yeah.
Not just in making, but also in watching.
Yes. As we've discussed many times.
Yeah, I mean, like, if you think back to, like, say, Perfect Kirby, where the creators had to get special permission from Tom Fulp of Newgrounds himself to raise the bandwidth limit, so to raise the file size limit so they can upload their thing. Although this is, let's say, well, it both is and isn't more graphically intensive than something like Perfect Kirby.
Yeah.
Yeah, let's start by talking about the way it looks, which is at times very minimally animated, almost entirely using found assets, JPEGs and that kind of animation style.
A lot of it's like static images moving around.
Yeah, and kind of puppeteering them and like making them wobble back and forth.
Yeah.
But also there are a lot of 3D assets.
Yeah, like... I wasn't expecting a CG-based space battle at the end, because, full disclaimer, I haven't actually, like, seen this to the end before. I think I've watched, like, pieces of it in the past.
Mm.
I was not expecting a full-on 3D fucking CG space battle.
So I don't know what models are being used for the 3D space battle. I do not know the provenance of these models.
Yeah.
If you, Flashketeer, know where they are from, please let us know. If these were made like natively by one of the creators, then that's very cool.
Yeah.
If they are taken from, I don't know, some like late 90s, early 2000s 3D game or something, then that is also interesting.
I think it's like 50-50. They could have made it themselves, but also could have very easily ripped it from a game.
Mm. Yeah, I don't know.
No, literally no idea, yeah.
What I do know is that I kind of really like this.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, Alex, why don't you tell us about the plot?
Oh, right, okay. I mean, yeah. we've all read To Kill a Mockingbird.
Mm-hmm.
Like it's the classic.
I mean, I actually haven't. I've only seen the film. I'm such a poser.
Okay, I mean, you know, the film covers much of the same things the book does. Themes. You got a little bit of racial injustice and the class struggle.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
A little bit about gender roles and their place in society and the law. You know that.
How many of those are reflected in this particular?
Almost none, which is fan fucking tastic.
Yeah. So this takes the kind of I'd say not overdone but familiar joke setup of, oh no, I've got to do a book report for class, but I clearly haven't read the book.
I have read chapter one. And no further than this.
Yeah, but I've got a whole 10 minutes to fill, and the teacher is staring at me.
I have read the inside cover, chapter one, and the blurb.
Yeah, exactly. And so it spins off into its own story, and in this case the story becomes, instead of a heart-wrenching legal drama, it becomes an epic space war.
Yeah, I think this is a really good illustration of where a lot of us are at this point in time, when most of us are being asked to write a book report. Like, we're between sort of 12 and 14. We don't want to read To Kill a Mockingbird. We want to watch Star Wars. And this is a really good illustration of the mental process of a teen who may have been asked to read To Kill a Mockingbird and watch Star Wars instead, which, you know, is very easy to put yourself in their shoes.
Yeah. So we start with the protagonist, let's say, the narrator.
Yeah.
The teen, who honestly is, albeit with terrible mic quality, voice acted pretty well.
Yeah, not too bad, actually.
Yeah, sure. He gets the you know, the cadence and the slight uncertainty with language that you'd expect for like a 12-year-old giving a report.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
So he starts off going through like the basic, introducing us to the characters, including Dill, who is just a dill pickle, which I enjoyed a lot, and also Jem, who is worthless. Atticus Finch only appears as a pair of legs at the beginning.
He's just a pair of legs. And Boo Radley, who is a
pirate now.
He's now a pirate.
Yeah, because it turns out that the treasure hidden in the tree was actually a big treasure chest. And mm-hmm. Boo Radley is the leader of a group of pirates.
He rides on a flaming
shark.
Shark, yeah.
Yep. Scout is not a precocious, like, 9-year-old girl, but is in fact a robot man.
Yeah.
Who looks like a homebrew proto man.
Yeah, I was going to say exact same thing, like knockoff Mega Man X.
And then the Mockingbird appears. Tell us about the Mockingbird, Alex.
The Mockingbird is just like a really fucking cool looking ship.
Yeah, it's a fucking like future spaceship helicopter monster thing.
It looks like it flew off the front cover of like an Iron Maiden album or something.
Yeah, like, yeah, it really does. It's got like a cool like half skull face, and it's got claws and cannons.
Yeah.
But also like big helicopter blades, and like
it's really cool looking,
glowing red eyes, and apparently it shoots lightsabers from its mouth.
This is what I'm saying. This kid just quite clearly watched Star Wars instead of doing the book report.
Yeah, it's great because you get this kind of Calvin Ball thing, you know, where everything escalates according to child logic, right? So yeah. the pirate doesn't just have a musket. The pirate actually has a laser gun, but it's actually a laser sword, like,
which
with
is also
guns
a
attached.
Gun, and it can shoot more swords.
Yeah, I mean, because sure, why not?
Fuck not? Yeah.
Yeah, and like the pirates have their own airship, and all the pirates are the same. Apart from Boo Radley, all the pirates are the same smushed JPEG of a man in a pirate costume.
I thought it was Jack Black, of course. it's not.
It is not Jack Black, to my knowledge. No.
No.
So yeah, we get an armada of pirates versus the Mockingbird, who grows a second head.
Who is that other head?
I don't know.
I actually had that thought when he came up, like, who is this man?
Is this guy
of some significance? If you know, let us know. Who is that?
Please, tell us, who is the Mockingbird head? You know, and like, it's that early 2000s rule of random cool, right? Everything is epic, everything is over the top. Because we get pirates, and we got robots, and spaceships, and ninjas, and sharks on fire, and later on we have bears on fire.
I fucking love when they start, like, they just bring the bears in from out of nowhere. They just appear mid-battle, and it's like, fuck yeah, please.
Yeah, yeah. It ends up with this epic pirates versus ninjas battle, so cross that one off your bingo cards.
It was missing is some zombies. That's all it's missing from this.
It is mentioned that the Mockingbird summons some zombie Mockingbirds.
Oh, well, there you go.
Who are, quote, even bigger and blacker than the original Mockingbird.
So, what are we missing from the monkey cheese formula? Is it actual monkeys? I think it might be.
I think you're right, yeah. We don't have any monkeys and no, like, baked goods.
There's no pie, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, but like we have a time traveling castle. We go to the moon and ancient China.
They have automatic weapons for some reason.
Of course they do. Yeah. Well, yeah. So here are some things I wrote down. When the pirates attack the Mockingbird, they shoot lesser pirates at the Mockingbird, but the lesser pirates don't mind because it's just like getting a small cut to them, and they like being cut because they're pirates.
That lines up with what I know about pirates, yeah.
We forgot to mention, but one other very important character is Calpurnia. Who is described as Scout's slave. Citation needed, citation needed, citation needed.
Incredible, massive quotes, yeah.
Who, after doing nothing for the first half of the book, informs Boo Radley and the pirates about, quote, a mysterious ancient slave book called How to Kill a Mockingbird.
Yeah.
Written in African, which is being kept in a ninja lair in ancient China.
So much about that. Oh my god, where do you even start with that sentence?
I mean, as MacGuffins go, it's pretty high quality.
Literally start with, which African dialect is it written in, and why is it in China?
The ancient Chinese ninja. But like, sure, why not? You know,
why not?
Like coherently, it fits better than most of the DC films. in terms of, you know, like what's the big baddie afterwards? How do we get it? How do we stop it? You know, this is a lot more coherent.
Yeah.
So they've got a time traveling castle. There's a big Matrix 3 finale.
Oh, it's so good. I fucking love the stupid CG fight at the end with the fucking with the bears being like that. Just I was just like, did that? This is the best.
Oh yeah.
I wish I'd watched this like back to front when I was a kid, because I would have definitely fucking remembered this.
Yeah. So the ninja leader's name is Zorlak 7.
Of course. Yeah.
And there's a huge fight in the rain and the smoke and the steam. With sharks
in space,
and bears flying everywhere.
Yeah.
Well, it's not in space yet.
Oh no! Yeah, remember. You're right.
So we get this huge battle, and then it cut. Then there's an intertitle that says 9 years later, and there's just a hill littered with bodies. but the mockingbird has come back because, you know, the pirates and ninjas, they were fighting each other, but then they realize that they need to join forces to fight the mockingbird together. And in the book entitled How to Kill a Mockingbird, they find out the true way to kill a mockingbird, which, Alex, is...
You have to drop the moon.
Drop the moon on it.
And that's literally what they do. They form a chain with using the church castle time traveling machine,
yep,
and pull the moon and drop it on the mockingbird.
After using all of the Earth's nuclear weapons.
After using all the Earth's nuclear weapons, yeah.
Yeah, and this is after an epic space battle with like a 3D castle exploding.
Yeah.
And like, and again, like, the actual composition of some of these shots is really cool.
Fucking great, yeah.
And there's even a bit of comedy. Like, there's one bit with like a T-Rex with like a head-mounted cannon floating in space that keeps trying to shoot at one of the mockingbirds.
Keeps spinning around, as would happen, because the top part of you would be propelled backwards, and then you would just keep... That's scientifically accurate.
It's very good. It's very good. I wrote down T-Rex shoot and spin. so there you go. There are dinosaurs, because the ninjas turned into dinosaurs, and some of them turned into balls of fire, and some of them turned into presidents. Wait, no,
wait,
I don't
not
mean presidents. I mean volcanoes.
I mean volcanoes.
Yeah. And in the end, Scout is the only survivor. And then we get some stills from the film, and Atticus Finch is there in the courtroom, and there's one of the pirates.
Oh, the fucking pirate edited into, like, the finale of the film.
So
killed
good.
Me. I was like, no, no, you can't. That's illegal. Oh.
Yeah.
Oh, it's so... oh.
So, like... And then we get the credits, which is just a single title which says created by Anthony Scuderi, Nico Benitez.
That's it. This is a static image that's played over Chariots of Fire.
Yes, Chariots of Fire.
It's a full minute, 60 seconds of just Chariots of Fire with the two guys' names on it, which is, you know what, they fucking deserve it after that.
Yeah, honestly, the music choices throughout this are...
Oh, we forgot about the part where the final massive fight happens over the final countdown.
Yep, for the final countdown during the final fight.
Yeah.
We get some like really epic early 2000s techno. Mm-hmm. So the thing is, right, this would be fun on its own. Yeah. However, since it is presented as a book report, there are a couple of interstitial moments where the narrator talks about the use of literary devices.
Oh, yeah. What they say, like, the reason it won the Pulitzer Prize is because it used dramatic irony, which they spell just dramarony.
Yep, foreshadowing, pirates.
Foreshadowing is the number four and shadowing.
Yeah, we also get the diagram of rising action, falling action, climax, denouement.
Uh-huh.
Denouement, which is French for the ending.
I mean, that part is like, I was like looking at it and I'm like, I was looking for a joke at that part and I was like, no, that's actually how that works.
Yeah, kind of. So, you know, like, this is... yeah, like, in the middle, there's, like, a brief screen where it says, Harper Lee, bullet point, won Pulitzer in 1492. Bullet point, was a girl. Bullet point, ghost?
Oh, yeah, I forgot about that.
So, like, this is just great fun. Also, I have to point out that we do get a shot of, the timeline that they travel across in their...
Oh.
Time castle.
Yeah.
So, they go back from, in order, recent times, past the Age of Pyramids, the Great Depression, dinosaurs, the French Revolution, Jesus, Boo Radley is born from an egg, days of yore, fire invented, ancient China.
That's how it went. Those were the events in order. Yes.
And you know, sure. Why not?
This
is just a good time.
Imagine society if To Kill a Mockingbird was actually like written like this.
You know, I'm glad that we have the version that we have.
why ever so.
I mean, the thing is that all of the things that this does well.
Mm-hmm.
Do not show up in the actual To Kill a Mockingbird, and vice versa.
Yes,
you know, like I'm glad that we also have the version about, you know, like prejudice and overcoming insurmountable social pressures and all that kind of thing,
and not the version about space pirate ninjas.
Well, we have both now. That's the great thing.
Now we have, but yeah, that's
we have an abundance of riches in terms of literary canon.
It's truly a world of opposites.
And in conclusion, How to Kill a Mockingbird is the land of contrasts.
Yes, exactly.
Gosh, I think the only thing that I have a problem with is some of the audio mixing is really bad. Again, this is like 2004, so
yeah,
most people didn't know how to do audio yet, but there are some unforgivable like clipping issues and
it peaks the mic a couple of times. Yeah,
you can hear where each scene is cut because there's like a little
yeah.
But other than that, you know, like, I was thoroughly entertained by this.
Me too.
See, the thing is that, like, from a 2022 lens, not knowing anything about this, it is easy to be worried of, it's To Kill a Mockingbird, this famous text about, like, racial tensions in the Deep South.
Mm-hmm.
What are they going to do? Uh-oh.
Yeah, I see, like, a flash animation about that from, like, 2004, and alarm bells are going to start ringing. You're like, uh-oh,
but
might not be good.
By completely rejecting any semblance of
by rejecting the text.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, wow.
This manages, for the most part, to dodge all of that. And yeah, it's fun. I'm glad that you have got to see this for the first time now.
I obviously the lesson we're taking away from this today is if you ask to write a book report, absolutely write it about a book that does not fucking exist by almost the same title.
So it actually reminds me of a recent episode of this current series of the UK Apprentice.
Right.
Where, which is just better than the US one, by the way, just so you know. So the in a recent episode of The Apprentice, the teams had to come up with, like, a tour.
Right.
That they could sell people on in North Wales.
Okay.
So, like, you know, what? So, like, one team decided to go with it, like, a tour where you're on an old timey train and you go through the valleys, you know.
Yeah.
And another team went for a tour through some caves, you know, learn about the mines and, you know, that part of history. And the thing is that because it's The Apprentice and because they're all shit at everything, neither person doing the tour guide thing knew anything at all about the location, the history, anything.
Oh my god.
And so they kept trying to, like, come up with, like, very small facts that they could think of. Like, the miners, they would eat cheese, sandwiches, and soup. And, like, as I was watching this, I was saying to my flatmate, because we were watching it together, I was saying to them, like, if it was me, I would just make the whole thing up as, from whole cloth. I would tell the biggest, most ridiculous lies about North Wales, because if people are paying, you know, like, upwards of £60-70 for a day out with a tour, they've got to be entertained somehow.
Well, I'm glad I haven't seen it, because as somebody from North Wales, it's deeply offensive.
Yeah, so I think that's about all we can say about this cartoon for now.
Yes.
Gosh, it's fun. Do yourself a favour and watch it. It's going to put a smile on your face.
Definitely watch it. Yes.
It makes me want to, like, load up a game of Alpha Centauri or something and, like, play in character as this 12-year-old.
Hell yeah. Hell yeah.
So I believe that brings us to our own book report that we like to call Flash.
Yes. Well, I've done some research about the people behind How to Kill a Mockingbird. It was created, as is quite prominently featured in the video, by Anthony Scodery and Nico Benitez. It was uploaded in a kind of nebulous, anywhere between 2003 to like 2005. The jury is out on exactly when it's uploaded, because it's on Albino Black Sheep, so it doesn't give an exact date. But it was uploaded to YouTube in 2010, for certain. And where, as of recording, it currently has, on the official channel, 148,404 views. It's probably got way more than that on Albino Black Sheep, but on YouTube, yeah, it does seem like a low number. And that's just like the quote-unquote official upload of this is the number of views it has. This does appear to have been the only creative endeavor that was undertaken by Scodery and Benitez that, like, gained any traction at all. They do not appear to have any social media presence. I did try and find any mention of The Flash on Twitter, and instead, unfortunately, discovered an alarming amount of people who think the title of Harper Lee's book is actually How to Kill a Mockingbird.
I mean, sure.
Sure.
Right.
They did used to be the owners of the website awesomefunny.com,
Awesomefunny.com, okay.
Which is now available for purchase at the low, low price of $2,695.
Oh, I'm a bit short then.
So the Wayback Machine shows the site used to host not only How to Kill a Mockingbird, but another flash called Invention Pioneers of Note. Clicking on it on the Wayback Machine does absolutely nothing.
No.
Most of the links on the Wayback Machine are just broken.
We'll have to track that down.
We'll have to see if we can track it down. There were also two games. Virtual Trapped in a Well and and Solitude, which kind of sound the same. There were two text posts titled Visa to Japan and CIA Application. No, thank you. And a wallpaper section. And then it's just an audio file called Suicide Hotline. Yeah. So the 13-minute epic does not have appeared to have influenced the creators to have gone on to become animators or writers or producers or anything like that. Instead, they both appear to now co-own Grid Space Incorporated.
And what is Grid Space Incorporated?
Well, reading about Grid Space Incorporated, apparently it's the world's most trusted contact center automation platform. It's full of really creepy graphs that say stuff like, quote, identify a customer's intent, qualifications, satisfaction in real time. And it talks about pre-built key performance indicators and flags. This is the part that really made my blood boil. Drop into a live call when a customer relationship is at stake.
Okay, so they're in whatever part of customer service management uses those terrifying words.
Yes, absolutely.
Well, at least they're gainfully employed.
I've just written a note. Nope, no thanks.
I mean, you are coming at this from a long career in various customer service roles, so.
Yeah, like the phrase, when a customer relationship is at stake, is that when the customer decides, like, halfway through me explaining what our service is, they just start shouting? Anyway, it is.
I mean,
the
other day I did have to literally beg someone to stop calling me about my phone contract.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah, no, I totally get. I get the whole, like, you call me too many times thing. Like, that's totally valid.
It was the fifth time in a week.
That shouldn't happen. Like, any actual, like, contact center that, like, actually follows the rules is only supposed to call you, like, once a week.
Yeah.
No more than that. Unless you agree or are actively engaged in, like, purchasing through the service and you want to be kept updated.
So, hey, Anthony, Nico, listen to Alex here. She's got a good head on her shoulders. Give her a job.
I mean, I've got, like, a pretty okay one at the moment, but sure. it's also, unfortunately, it is definitely them. Both the co-owners graduated from Stanford University, and the animation used to be hosted on the Stanford website.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay. Neat.
Anyway, that's just kind of sad and disappointing. But yeah, at least, as Tom said, at least they're gainfully employed. They are doing.
And hey, Anthony, Nico, if you're listening to this somehow, give us an email. Why not?
We
can talk about SEO optimization.
Here are some comments that I've got from Albino Black Sheep. Why don't we read them?
Okay, so I'm going to start, because why not? Alex Van Diver, a year ago, said, "Just as good as it was when I first saw it however many years ago. I cannot believe this site is still up and running."
That's the attitude we're looking for. That's exactly why this podcast exists, is like running to new grounds because you randomly remember one thing from like 12 years ago and gleefully discovering it still exists.
Yeah.
Raven 6 years ago said, "You're a butthole." "This is genius. This deserves a Pulitzer to prize."
That reminds me, please do, if you enjoy the show, leave a review on your podcaster of choice.
It does help.
Maybe someday we can win the Pulitzer to prize.
I would love to Pulitzer to prize.
Dr. Wunderbar, 6 years ago, said, "R.I.P. Harper Lee, may you fight ninjas and pirates forever in Valhalla."
Do you hear that noise? It's Harper Lee spinning in her grave.
Well, you know, we, like, Harper Lee only wrote one full novel, right?
Kind of one and a bit, but yeah.
Yeah. So, we don't know that she wasn't spending a lot of the rest of her time being really into ninjas and pirates.
We did. You know what? You're absolutely right. We don't know that. There's no way for us to validate.
Yeah, like, she might have been the biggest Pirates of the Caribbean fan. she might have had Cutthroat Island on Laserdisc. We don't know.
We literally don't know. Fucking Laserdisc, wow. I've thought about that for a really long time. Karen Peterson, 7 years ago, said, "The fact that this loads in seconds is the true measure of how drastically times have changed."
Ooh, yes.
Yes.
Karen, you are spot on.
Spot fucking on.
Yep. Yeah, again, like, it is very impressive that this 13-minute flash, A, got the traction it did, given its size, and B, like, is actually well-paced and funny still.
Yeah. Yeah. And, like, just generally really well-made and put together. Like, still fun to watch. It doesn't hurt my eyeballs like some other Flash cartoons that we've watched.
It hurts the ears a little bit.
A little bit. But you can adjust volume. That's fine.
Yeah, yeah. So yeah, that was How to Kill a Mockingbird, and that was wild. That was great fun.
A good time was had by
both.
Well, it was definitely had by me and you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's gonna bring us on to our second feature for the evening. A much shorter but no less potent example of mid-aughts internet culture, because we are going to be learning all about ebaumsworld.com.
Oh boy. this is gonna be a doozy, isn't it? Other people's work has made him rich. He hires some male prostitutes, dress them up in three-piece suits. His faithful team of lawyers made the internet his bitch, till Lotex came along, punched him in the face and banged his mom. And Mr. Bomb, in quiet disgrace, had his dumb website erased. Well, sadly, that's a lie. There's still an e-bombs world out there.
And the outro screen tells us, quote, "We've never been the biggest fan of Ebaum, seeing as he is making a living off of thievery, but he crossed the line when he posted malicious code on the front of Ebaum's World, which caused anyone visiting his site to call pages from something awful, wasting bandwidth. This was a direct attack which was illegal, and it's sad to know that it will go unpunished. You know at the bottom of Ebaum's World where it says you can ask to have your content removed? They just ignore the emails. All admins, owners, and moderators of Ebaum's are scam artists, whether or not they think so. Spread the word about Ebaum. It may be true we won't be able to shut him down, but I'd like to be partially responsible for making him less money. Fuck you, Ebaum." www.somethingmoreawful.com. Animation by Altair4. Music by Trapezoid. So, there's a lot to unpack here, isn't there?
Wow. Yeah.
Let's start with the cartoon itself.
Sure, okay.
So the animation itself is, again, pretty simple. There's a definite style here. It's it's very kind of deliberately kind of ugly, cartoonish, exaggerated.
Yeah.
We've got some kind of weird shaped guys. occasional bits of animation, but again, yeah, it's pretty minimal. We get a couple. We don't even get much of a caricature of the central villain.
No, not
Eric
really.
Borman, who is just painted as this kind of bald everyman. But
yeah,
that does mean that the animator can sort of contort and dress him up however he likes.
I mean, Eric Borman is such a non-entity to these people that they don't even deign to really give him features.
Maybe. I mean,
yeah.
So, you want to tell us about the plot of this cartoon?
I mean, it follows the story of the song, which is, for those that may not know, and God bless you, Eric Borman used to be, I'm going to guess E-Bomb's world doesn't exist anymore. We might learn about this.
We will learn plenty.
I'm going to go with used to, because the last time I visited E-Bomb's world was like probably close to 20 years ago now. The owner of ebombsworld.com, which, as the song said, it used to just take whatever it could find, videos, images, what have you, host them on E-Bomb's world, slap the watermark on, and also run ads on the site. That's how Eric Borman had his empire of ebombsworld.com running for a good long while, as far as my knowledge goes.
Yeah.
And the song is basically try to take him down a peg, but also it like paints Lotax as like some like underdog.
Yeah, so that's the big twist in the middle of the story, right? Like, so Eric Borman is this evil, is an evil content stealing slut, quote unquote.
Yeah.
Who has a team of evil lawyers who are actually male prostitutes. Has, quote, made the internet his bitch. Until Lotax, Richard Kianka, the erstwhile founder and owner of somethingawful.com, quote, came along, punched him in the face, and banged his mum.
Hmm.
And then Eric's website gets erased. But actually it didn't. But if we all sing together, then maybe the gods will hear our cry and destroy and take Eric down a peg.
Didn't Something Awful in E-Bomb's world like run concurrently? Like, weren't they basically relevant at the same time? Or am
You are jumping the gun a little bit there, Alex.
Okay, all right,
this saga goes some places.
All right, okay.
But yeah, you know, as like a little fun, goofy song hit piece, I think it definitely does its job. The animation's simple but pretty fun. The fact that Lotax is kind of like this underdog hero really hasn't aged well, but even at the time was a little bit like, really?
Yeah.
Also, he's drawn with like beefy abs.
Yeah, they turned him into fucking Superman. Like,
and inexplicably, like a dump truck ass.
Yeah. From what I know about Lotax, he did not have either of these things.
No, well, we'll get onto that later.
Yeah.
Before we get onto the saga that this is part of, let's talk about the song itself. Alex, you're our music correspondent.
Yeah.
As an actual musician,
actual,
lady yourself,
real paid musician. Whoa.
Yeah.
I mean, it's instantly an unmistakably fucking Lemon Demon.
Yep, this is Nilsa Sariga.
Yeah, he's back. It's been a while since we've seen Neil, actually.
A little bit, yeah.
But he always comes back. Yeah, it's a good song. It's the one thing I really enjoy about like early Lemon Demon is that they're in a range that is like pretty singable for pretty much anyone at any skill level,
mm-hmm.
which I think probably helped towards the popularity of Lemon Demon quite a bit. It's easy to sing along and easy to feel like you are hitting the same notes that Neil is, because you probably are. It's quite a low register for these ones.
I mean, this is a low register for Neil as well, this song. Like, you can tell that he's having a bit of trouble with the low notes.
Yeah. It's a good song. It's catchy. The instrumentation is absolutely fine. It's going to be lodged in my brain for probably the rest of the week now that I've listened to it, which is a testament to how well the song's put together, because if a song's well put together, it will lodge itself in, well, not always, but more often than not, like a catchy song. It's definitely catchy. A catchy song will lodge itself in your brain.
Yeah, it's a proper earworm. Like, especially that verse where Lotax punches Erica in the face and bangs his mum. I have never not had that in the back of my head. I don't know. It's crude, it's silly, but also, like, it's very catchy.
Isn't there a little bit of a barbershop quartet thing going on a little?
Harmonizes. It reminds me, this song in particular gives me some Ben Folds 5 vibes.
Definitely. Yeah,
you know, like,
I mean,
like the piano rock.
Neil definitely listens to Ben Folds 5. Like
he does. No, he has talked about this before in interviews.
There you go. So
that's definitely a thing. It's good. It's catchy. This is a pretty well put together song and cartoon for being made in what we will discover is quite a quick turnaround.
Mm.
So I believe that's gonna bring us on to, I mean, so actually before we do, we should mention that, like, in terms of character assassination, this is ticking all the boxes that you would want for a mid-2000s like 2 minutes hate.
Yeah,
right. So first of all, this guy is stealing other people's content. That's no bueno, especially in the early to mid days of the internet when, like, content is king, right?
Mm-hmm.
And stealing things, and not just stealing things, but putting your own watermark on it. No.
Claiming ownership of something that's not yours. Mm-mm.
Exactly. Yeah. We get some classic old-timey homophobia in here as well. Because, you know, like, haha, he's evil and he's hired some male prostitutes, and they're in tight, like, spandex lawyer outfits and top hats for some reason. And also Eric's a slut. Here's a picture of Eric as a sexy girl.
Wow, you know. Got him.
You know, right? Also, my favorite visual image of the cartoon is actually the brief shot of Zeus and Thor.
Oh,
Thor is just, you know, Thor from the Marvel comics. But Zeus is an actual, like, an actual clip art of Zeus from the Disney film Hercules,
and they fucking watermark him.
Copyright 1997 to 2005
that,
Disney.
That still frame is like peak fucking 2006,
so
something awful. Like,
it's good because it would not be very long until Thor is also part of the Disney copyright.
Oh god, Disney consumes everything.
Anyway, that brings us on to the long and sordid saga that we're going to cover in this next flash. So this cartoon was made in basically a few days and uploaded in early November of 2005. It was, the song was composed by Nilsa Sariga under his alias Lemon Demon, under his other alias Trapezoid, which was his username on the somethingawful.com forums. It was also animated by Alt-F4, Sean Vuillez. I can never remember how to say his name. who we covered way back in episode one, as he was the animator of the Ultimate Showdown of Ultimate Destiny.
Of course.
So for some more information about him, you can go way back to our very first episode. Sorry about the audio quality. We do get better.
it was episode one. Come on.
Yeah, but he was a pretty prolific Flash animator for a few years in the mid-aughts and collaborated with the folks of Too Much Spare Time, based in Vancouver, British Columbia, I believe. So, and Neil Cicerega we have covered extensively in the past.
Many, many times. Many different projects, many different aliases.
Yeah. So, Ebaum's World was a comedy site founded in 2001.
Okay.
That was one of these, what would now be called a content aggregator site.
Mm-hmm.
Where they would post things like funny Photoshops, viral videos, images, other internet memes, that kind of thing. But they had a reputation. And that reputation that was there from the start, but only escalated into the mid-2000s, was that Eric Borman and his site would take an awful lot of pre-made funny content, like Flash animations or Photoshop images and that kind of stuff, from other sites, and host it on Ebaum's World with the Ebaum's World watermark. This included sites such as Something Awful, YTMND, Albino Black Sheep, Weeble Stuff, Newgrounds, 4chan, when 4chan was nascent, and even big companies like Viacom threatened the site with legal action for copyright infringement.
Fucking hell.
Yeah. The site constantly denied these claims. In an interview with G4 Attack of the Show back in February of 2006, Ebaum's World's lead project manager, Michael Parker, was interviewed by Attack of the Show and quote, "We don't make any money off content. We make money off advertising. We have a pay scale for the monthly contest that we do. This whole thing about stealing content, there's not a need because we pay decent money for our content." The thing is, at the time of this Flash video going live, there was also a website going live called ebaumsworldsucks.com. ebaumsworldsucks.com was a short-lived but highly visited website which contained large amounts of large amounts of evidence, basically big lists of stuff that Ebaum's World had stolen, primarily from Something Awful, but also from other places as well. Mm-hmm. So basically, Ebaum's World had been sort of a known problem, or a known sort of notorious place for a few years, basically since its inception.
Yeah.
You know, like if you were a user of FARC, if you were using of Something Awful, that kind of thing, then like you looked down on Ebaum's World just as part of the culture.
Yeah.
It wasn't until mid to late 2005 that things properly started to escalate, as it was revealed that Ebaum's World had stolen entire Something Awful Photoshop competition material, stripped them of the original uploaders' usernames, and claimed them as Ebaum's World's original material. So, basically, at the time, Lotax, owner of Something Awful, said, "Hey, all the users of the Something Awful forums, go fuck 'em up." and this inspired a quote unquote goon rush, as they were known back in the day.
Ah, yes.
Of Something Awful users mass registering for the Ebaum's World forums and going there to spam everything from shock images to malicious code. This is detailed thoroughly in the Ebaum's World entry on the Something Awful Essayclopedia page. Yeah, so Lotax described it as, quote, "Forum Invasion Friday. Knock yourselves out." This will end once Mr. Bowman removes the shit he stole from you guys. We are not telling you to do anything illegal, so don't. If you're pissed about Ebaum ripping off content, feel free to raise hell about it, as long as you do so legally. We don't want to cause any problems for our ISP, so make sure you're aware that we are explicitly informing you that you should not do anything illegal like DOS attacks of any kind, said another admin called Radium. However, a number of something awful goons invading the site took it upon themselves to post various code scripts that would make thousands of hits on Ebaum's world and thus DOS the site. The thing is, right, after a short amount of downtime on the part of Ebaum's world, it was discovered that the Ebaum's world website, on every single Ebaum's world page, was running a script that would automatically drag that would automatically grab the archives page back from something awful and hammer the servers in return.
Oh.
So this was a protracted little war that went on for a good week or two. And in the middle of it, a few days after the initial goon rush on the 7th of November, this song and flash were made. As a rallying cry for members of the forums that was then mirrored and mirrored and mirrored and mirrored and mirrored across literally dozens of other sites and became like a big viral sensation of 2005 to the point where Neil and Sean were interviewed by a few online news outlets. This was like a phenomenon at the time. Ultimately, things just kind of petered out, and Eric Borman's reputation was sort of cemented as a bad guy with a bad website. So, what happened next, you may be wondering? In 2007, Ebaum's World sold for $15 million to a company called Handheld. Which happened after, basically, Eric Borman's life had been severely impacted by the forum invasion and by this cartoon, sort of spreading the word about his and his site's bad practices, to the point of Ebaum's World headquarters being vandalized.
Oh my god.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, the thing is that Ebaum's World had been hemorrhaging viewers for the last couple of years before the sale. And also, this is right when YouTube was starting to pick up steam.
Of course, yeah.
Right, this is just after the YouTube sale to Google. And so Eric Borman was one of these early internet people who was able to cash out. You know, he ended up just like making good.
Yeah.
You know, he did well for himself. Let's see. So Handheld Entertainment was also known as ZView Corporation.
Right.
And Borman remained employed with them until 2008.
Wow.
However, in 2009, he and his employees got fired from ZView. And he promised that he would make a comeback with something called Ebaum's World, or Ebaum's TV, Ebaum's Nation, rather, which never materialized.
Oh.
Eric Borman appears to have just kind of disappeared since then. I hope that he was able to make the money last, is all I can say, because he just kind of became a non-entity. This was 2009.
How much was it? Like...
15 million, but that was like partially stock, partially over a few years.
You can probably make that last.
But still, like a total of 15 million in 2007 money, just before the Great Recession, is not bad.
It's not bad. And like,
no.
having held down a job like that and basically having been an entrepreneur, it probably would have been very easy to just like get some tech job in LA.
I know, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's probably what he's doing now. I don't know.
Probably.
He has a common enough name that it's hard to find much about him nowadays that isn't directly about him and E-Bomb's world. So after Eric disappeared, E-Bomb's world was sold in 2016 to Literally Media, which is a large corporation based in Israel, which owns websites such as Cheeseburger and Know Your Meme.
Oh my fucking god.
E-Bomb's world in 2022, at the time of recording, still exists and looks exactly as you would expect a content aggregator for comedy content to look and feel in 2022. Here is a link to it now.
You're fucking joking me. Oh my fucking god. What the fuck?
The current front page features articles such as 36 WTF pics that are the epitome of cringe, 15 drastically different before and after shots, 15 times people need to remain calm, Snoop Dogg and Kevin Hart react to the Island Boys. It's basically just a content aggregator. But it's still being kept up with and updated very, very, very regularly.
Ah, but if you scroll down far enough, you can see the peanut butter jelly time banana.
It's not just that, it's also the little icon at the top of your browser.
Fuck, you are absolutely right. I completely missed that.
Yeah, yeah. So, even now, E-Bomb's World is making buck.
Holy shit.
Other people's material.
See, I just kind of assumed it died.
No. Like any good parasite, the website thrives.
Dang.
It outlasted Lotax.
It fucking, yeah. I mean, something awful still exists.
Yeah.
I don't know which is more surprising. I think the fact that both of them still exist in the year 2020, like a full, 2022, sorry, like a full fucking, what is that now, 17 years later? Holy shit.
Yeah, but Alex, everyone's always going to have time for 21 perfect fits that satisfy our eyes, or maybe 25 useful guides that might come in handy.
What about more fun facts for your Trivial Pursuits?
What about 35 funny gaming memes to activate your laughter functions?
Well, it can't possibly beat out 15 random facts to feed your brain.
Like, E-Bomb's World Gaming on Facebook has over 100,000 likes.
Why?
Because,
I mean, it's Facebook, like,
because it's really, really, really easy if you have the framework in place to just churn.
But also, it's Facebook, and there are no standards.
Yeah. So this is why, and this is something that we actually spoke about briefly in our previous episode with our lovely guest Ulse, right?
Yeah.
In the modern, you know, Web3 landscape.
Ugh.
Right? Where every piece of content is churned and churned through the same handful of websites, where the actual creators are less likely than ever to get their dues for the things that they write or draw or animate or sing, E-Bomb's world is now just normal.
It was a grim portent of things to come.
I know, right?
Wow.
Because this could be cracked.com.
It fucking could be, yeah.
This could be funny junk. This could be cheeseburger.
Nice iFunny watermark.
I know, right? This could be 9gag.
14chag.
Yeah, exactly. Like, E-Bomb's world in many ways was just ahead of its time.
The irony is, at this point, Something Awful kind of is like the scrappy underdog, because it's like the last, one of the last vestiges of like a website that was just a website for the sake of being a website.
Hmm. and the quote-unquote dead gay forums are still going pretty strong.
Still going pretty, yeah. They are still going.
If anything, they have had a new lease of life post-Lotax.
I know.
Which is an awful lot.
I see what you did there. An awful lot. I see what you did there.
So yeah, that's the saga of ebalmsworld.com. No word on whether any mum banging actually took place. I'm guessing not.
Probably not.
But yeah, it's, as you can tell, this was a real rabbit hole to go down. Partially because all of the forum threads on Something Awful from the time of the conflict are still accessible to the if you have archives access, which I do. So, with that in mind, let's go into our comments, a couple of which are actually taken from Something Awful, but we're going to start with a couple. We're going to start with a couple from Newgrounds, if you want to take this one first.
Sure. All right. We got Switchblade Clock, November 6th, 2005. 5 out of 5, they said. Fucking brilliant. Every part of this movie is 100% correct. He is a little fucking thief, and I can't believe his website's still up. He's got every little fucking kid brainwashed into loving his site. I'm glad I heard about Newgrounds before E-Bombs World, or I'd be one of those little fanboys chatting on MSN with an account named ebombs_rocks_666@hotmail.com.
Hey, don't dox me.
don't reveal my secret email. about all the funny stuff that he made. He's a little fucking dick. He deserves a pulling of the ass in prison. I don't think anyone deserves that, if I'm going to be honest. But now talking about The Flash, it was brilliant. Was well. Okay. Great graphics. Synced with the song Excellent. And had great FBF, or frame-by-frame, animation. And there wasn't a bunch of overused graphics. Very good job. Keep up the good work.
So I picked this one because this is an example of how Newgrounds responded to it, right? Yeah. Because Newgrounds, especially in 2005, at some may say its peak of original popularity, was a place that prided itself on creativity and originality.
Yeah.
So if you want some attack dogs to point at the villain of the week,
you gotta go to Newgrounds, yeah.
They are the perfect audience for this. Uh-huh. And they lapped this up. This got weekly second place, daily feature. It was front paged. And even now it has a score of 4.72 out of 5.
Wow.
Which is colossal.
That's a pretty big deal.
1.5 million views, Alex.
Fucking hell, from Newgrounds, wow.
Yeah. Yeah. So the next thing I got from Newgrounds it actually has a reply from the animator. So I'm going to read the comment and you can read the reply.
Sure.
So the comment is from Krusty Weewer.
Okay.
And said, "Good? Yes. Second place? No. This movie is grossly overrated. It's a cool song, but next to masterpieces of animation and humor, like the Brackenwood series and Fallen Angel, this shouldn't stand a chance. People shouldn't vote high on a movie just because they support its cause." And then Alter 4 replied,
"You were totally the first person to say that. Brackenwood is like the opposite of my animation. The graphics are flawless, but the purpose and such leave much to be desired. Here, the song, in my opinion, and message are flawless, and the animation leaves some to be desired. I like the way the animation is. I'm sure I could have animated this quote-unquote masterpiece fully if I had wasted a bunch of time making backgrounds and such, but I think it would have taken away from the point. You say, people shouldn't vote high on a movie because they support its cause, where it is just as logical to say, people shouldn't vote high on a movie just because they like the animation. Both are true. The top-rated Flashes should have a mixture of all these things. I think Dad is Home should be the top-rated Flash because it's not lacking in any area. I think the fact that the Brackenwood series dominates the portal is unfair to us Flash artists who haven't worked for Disney."
Whoa.
Oh, shit.
Ooh. Ooh.
Ouchie. Mm. Stings.
So the next couple of comments are actually posts from the Something Awful thread about the Flash cartoon.
Did not think we'd be reading essay posts today, but let's fucking
give it a shot. Again, these are pretty representative.
All right.
So the first one I've got is by someone whose username is Hot Dog Day Number 55. And this is from November 17th, right? So this is 2 weeks after.
Uh-huh.
During my physics final today, I was trying to recall very important physics facts. What I recalled instead were lyrics to your catchy song. I don't think I did so well.
Oh dear. I hope Hot Dog Day did actually, like, do well on their physics final, because that's just unfortunate.
And next up, we've got this one from Something Awful.
The Squizzler.
The Squizzler!
I really enjoyed The Flash. It was witty, pretty, and catchy. My only complaint is the goony goon gooning content and the quote-unquote save us low-tax stuff. I understand you made up The Flash for the forums, but this is the sort of thing that hamstrings widespread appeal. Well, that and do not a lot of us make fun of ICP fans for this sort of Juggalos Unite thing?
I mean...
Yeah, he's not... They're not wrong. They're fucking not wrong.
Like, that's definitely a thing.
Yeah.
Again, like, this is emblematic of, like, some of the tension at the time, right?
Yeah.
So, like, another user called Underwater Shoe, excellent username, by the way, mm-hmm. said, does this make Lotax some sort of e-Jesus?
This is, like, right? Mirroring exactly what we said earlier on. Like, him being painted as some, like, savior is very...
Yeah. I know. It's increasingly... it's increasingly ironic, given that Neil Cisriga himself would be hounded off the forums due to I forget the exact circumstances, but basically he was posting awkwardly in a thread and he got dogpiled into just fucking off.
Sounds like something awful.
Yeah, I mean, again, this is while he was still a teenager, so...
You generally... Don't post too good when you're going through adolescence. That was my experience.
I know, right? and there's one final comment here, which is from Newgrounds, which, I'll just read it. This is by Talamir. Mm-hmm. This is from January 12th of 2011.
Wow, okay.
Talamir gave it 0 stars and said, lol, QQ more. It's 2011 and it's still up. Welcome to the internet. You guys honestly think a website is sinister and evil with everything else that's going on? Someone needs to get their priorities straight.
So no one told him about the sale, huh?
I mean, Ebound's World was still going strong at the time, is the thing.
Hmm. They've been sold at that point, though, right?
Oh, yeah, but, you know, the website was still a thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, the song and the Flash animation did really well. They spread to every corner of the Anglophone internet.
Yeah.
Like, they made Eric Borman a household name, depending on where online you were interested in frequenting. Yeah. It was made in the wake of a massive forum invasion, which included making, you know, like, hundreds upon hundreds of new accounts to try and clog the Ebound's World forums with usernames such as EboundFan666, Ebound is a racial slur, Ebound is a sexual slur, Ebound equals, you know, like basically just the most heinous, unpleasant, you know, trolling efforts, you know?
Peak 2005 comedy.
I mean, even then,
yeah,
you know, like, imagine logging onto your forum of choice and seeing it flooded by people called, like, I don't know, Count Cuck Fick Duck, or Boobs Boobs Boobs.
These are names of Twitter users you are listing right now. You are listing Twitter usernames. Doctor Plagiarist.
Yeah.
E-Weezer.
E-Weezer. Yeah. So that's the thing, right? At the time, this was like a powerful unifying crusade for members of a forum that was at the time, you know, like still in its prime, seeing itself threatened by what they saw as corporate interests.
Mm.
And then it kind of just ended up with the target of their hatred just cashing out.
Yeah, true.
And the website that was targeted, basically just the same. Like, there were a couple of lawsuits that ended up with positive results for content creators. I believe the creator of Animator vs. Animutation was paid $1,000.
Oh, cool.
In compensation.
Good.
But, like, for the most part, this was a victory for the content churn. This was a victory for the man, if you like.
It's, I kind of view it like bittersweet in a way, because essentially the song almost accomplished what it set out to do. Like, they got rid of Eric Borman, even if it wasn't a golden parachute. Like, they still got rid of him, and like, nobody knows what E-Bomb's world is now.
Not really, no.
Like, they basically shamed the man into obscurity. Like you said, you can't find him. What's he fucking doing now? No one knows. He pulled the eject button. He got a nice lot of money, but like, in 2022, who gives a shit?
But then, you know, from his perspective, just, you know, living well is the best revenge.
That's true. But, having said that, people do still know what Something Awful is.
Yeah, that's true. You see? And people still do know this song.
Uh-huh.
So, yeah. Yeah. It's, in conclusion, Eric Borman is a land of contrasts.
We've come back again.
So, that's gonna bring us... that's gonna bring us to our final chunk of the episode, which is going to be a couple of emails. Last episode we asked you folks to email in and tell us about some strange, weird media things that you're not even sure really existed. If you want to take this first email from Arp. I think we have a couple of emails worth of time left.
I would love to. Let's see. Arp says, "Hello. I have a few things I used to watch and read that I didn't think anyone else ever did, and I cannot find to save my life. First was a Sprite webcomic whose plot did not matter because the author self-insert, who was a Sprite of Kirby, kept resetting everything. The main characters were, if I recall, an original character, Simon Belmont from Castlevania, and a super de-resed rogue from Diablo 1 who was unidentifiable until the author explicitly said who they were. That's always good. The other one I can remember was this weird kid's show that was animated. It was supposed to teach kids about science, like what the Aurora Borealis was or what shooting stars were. And one of the characters was a very articulate but not well-educated baby. And that one I kind of want to find again, but searching animated kids show about science and there's a baby in it does not exactly bear fruit."
Wow. Thank you, Art. I have no idea what those are. But
no.
The thing is, the Sprite comic, that rings a bell.
I mean, you could, the Sprite comic, you could be describing several hundred Sprite comics.
That's the thing, but that's very specific. Again, like, Flashketeers, if you know what these are, then please email in and help put Art out of their misery.
Yes.
Like, because Because I certainly want to know. That sounds wild.
It does.
Next up, we have an email from LOM. Hi, LOM. Who says, "Hey, Flashcasters, Flash Pansters, Flash in the Panmanauts. You asked for the weirdest media I've experienced, and I've gone through quite a grip of weird in my day. There's The Void, a 2008 PC game, a Russian trip through a psychedelic purgatory realm, populated by a bunch of naked girls under lock and key by half-eldritch abominations. Also, there is the concept of color. Where did most of it go?" there's The Congress, which is a film from 2013, which I think I've mentioned on this podcast before, because it rules. The actress Robin Wright sells her likeness to the studio machine. A couple of decades later, technology insists that no, we really want all of it. As technology follows alongside the rise and fall of modern civilization, also it's part animated. It rules. Watch The Congress, everyone. It is fantastic.
Nice.
And there's Everything, a recent PC game. A minimalist sandbox representation of everything on several levels of reality, from quarks and atoms all the way to galaxies and higher conceptual realms. You can be a deer.
That's a good game.
And you can move solely by somersault. You can be a deer and shrink down to the size of an ant, or as big as a planet. Also, Alan Watts is there, narrating gentle existentialism. And as a nightcap, there is the entire shared universe of Fallen London. So you also have Sun the Sea, Sun the Skies, Mask of the Rose.
Yeah.
Victorian London has been politely abducted by bats, and dragged into a subterranean realm, possibly by cosmic horrors. There's mushroom wine, honey that makes you literally step into dreams, everyone's horny, and love stories are illegal contraband. It's okay, London gets better.
I'm glad it gets better in an alternate
universe. So, hope these are helpful. Best, Ella. Thank you, Ella. That's very sweet. And also, I have not experienced Fallen London, but I know a couple of people who are extremely into it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've heard it's very good.
Yeah. And finally, we have this unrelated but beautiful email.
Hmm.
This is from Guts. Hi, Guts. Who says, "Pash in the flan. Lo, I render unto you a mascot."
What?
Passion the flan.
Oh. Okay.
Alex, please describe the image I have just sent you.
Oh my god. Wow. It's a
Guts says, "Like to give them a smoochie, RT to poke them, and watch them jiggle. Ignore if you prefer moose."
It's a flan, like, it's literally a flan with a face.
Yeah.
It's got a blushy little face. It's been kissed. It's got a lipstick mark on it.
Yeah. This is beautiful. Thank you so much, Guts. I love them. Amazing. They are absolutely beautiful. I can only hope of one day radiating the same kind of hope and harmony that Pashy and the Flan does. Thank you so much. If you want to see a picture of Pashy and the Flan, this will be posted on our website and Twitter, which I'm about to tell you how to find, because wowie. we have like really cool listeners.
We do. We really do.
But I think that is going to take us to the end of today's events. We only had a couple of cartoons, but gosh, we had a lot to say about them both.
We sure did, yeah.
My goodness. So that brings us to the very end. And we, as always, are going to sign off by telling you where you can find us online, Alex.
Yes. You can still find me. I have handily collated everything that I have done and will be doing into one place. If you go to alexvalentine.card.co, it's all there.
Nice. As always, you can find me on Twitter at Gertrude Perkins. That's Gertrude, P-R-K-N-S. You can find us on Twitter at Flash IT Pancast or Flash It Pancast. Our website, as always, flashinthepancast.com. If you would like to email in, and I believe I would like people to email in and tell us about your old school internet rivalries.
Oh, hell yeah.
Was there a website that you were just unequivocally opposed to? Why was that? Was it some kind of terrible conflict, like the Yoshi Art versus the Yoshi's Corner feud of the mid to late aughts? That's actually a thing.
I know.
Whatever it is, tell us about it. That sounds pretty cool. And you can email us at flashinthepancast@gmail.com, as well as with anything else. If you want to give us more fan art, then please do. If you have any more questions, comments, everything like that, flashinthepancast@gmail.com. We've also got a website, flashinthepancast.com. We also are now on Patreon, as we mentioned at the start of the show. If you become a patron, you get access to early releases of these episodes. And at the higher tier, you can join our cool Flash in the Pan Discord community, which is pretty chill.
Yeah.
That is at patreon.com/flashinthepan. Thank you, as always, to our very gracious web host, Alicia E. Goranson. You can find her writings and recordings at alicia-goranson.com. Have we missed anything, Alex? I think that's basically everything.
I think we covered everything. I mean, we've already mentioned the Patreon. That's been mentioned.
Yeah, and as always, if you enjoy the show, you can support us on Patreon, or you can support us with your words and clicks by going to your podcatcher of choice, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever. Give us a good review. Tell people about it. Share us around. Because, you know, like, the more Flashketeers we have, the more cool stuff we're able to bring to you.
Nothing beats the word of mouth.
Exactly. So, until next time, I've been Tom.
I've been Alex.
And Eric Borman, quite disgraced, had his dumb website erased. Well, sadly, that's a lie. There's still an ebombsworld.com.
Have a great Flash. Flash in the pan. Flash in the pan.